All right, from Studio Live in beautiful Cumberland, BC, you're listening to the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm Chef Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Howlett. Thanks again for joining us as we explore the food culture of the Comox Valley and beyond. Chanchal Cabrera has joined us again.
You got it right this time? Did you get it right this time?
He got it right.
Excellent. Okay. Anyway, so we wanted to bring you back. We're going to do episode 129, and we were wanting to talk about, can food be your medicine?
This is touching on what we were talking about last episode with you.
To start? That's where kind of like, we're like...
Thanks, John.
I can jump in here.
Thanks, yeah, John. We'd love to have you just...
I mean, it's an interesting question. Can food be your medicine? I mean, why would it not? How could it not? How do people put such stuff in their bodies that they call food?
Well, I think that's how I was just sort of mumbling there for a second.
I actually talked to a fellow today who, honest to God, looked me in the eye and he told me that he has now changed his habits because of his health, but he was drinking 30 cans of soda a day.
Oh my goodness.
I'm like, how do you have even time to do that? He's 34. He's had all his teeth out.
Oh, my man.
All his teeth. I mean,
imagine,
why would food not be your medicine? To me, is a more relevant question, because everything you put in your mouth really can be your medicine.
Right.
So, you know, in your kitchen, if I was to go into my kitchen with any common or garden health problem, the kind of things I might go to the drugstore to buy something over the counter for, I could fix it in my kitchen. So cinnamon and ginger are great for fevers. If you're starting up with a cold or a flu, you take cinnamon and ginger to bring up your fever a little bit and burn through the infection. Garlic, of course, garlic is the, you know, they used to call it poor man's penicillin.
Right.
Amazing, amazingly effective antimicrobial. So for me, if I feel I have a cold coming on, I travel a good deal. I'm in airplanes and not the healthiest environment sometimes. And if I ever feel like I'm going to get a cold, I'll take a couple of cloves of garlic, chop them fine, set them aside for 10 minutes because they need to oxidize to be medicinally active.
Right.
And then put it on a spoon and swallow it down without chewing.
No chewing.
No chewing. Wow. Because if you chew two cloves of garlic, guess what? No friends left. I mean,
I'm going to say, back when I was young and uneducated, and not to say that I'm educated now, but I'm definitely not young, I would treat my own, I just sort of self-medicated, and I was sort of experimenting that way. And I would feel, I'd get chest colds quite often. And I was like, you know what? I'm not taking any medication for this. I'm going to just do this on my own. And I was certain that I could get through it with just garlic.
I'm sure you could.
And I could not believe, like, just eating raw garlic. I didn't let it oxidize, and I did chew it. And you're right, I did not have friends for a little bit. But I was amazed at how fast I would cycle through
it. Yeah, it's very, very powerful. And if you swallow it without chewing, it just means that you don't get that strong, strong taste.
Right.
And oxidizing does make it more effective. It will actually, just about 10 minutes of air, once you've broken the cell wall, it activates the enzyme that activates the constituents.
Right.
Wow. So it does help
a
little bit.
Flavor, or is that just really?
No, not really.
No, not really.
Just a couple of cloves a couple of times a day, usually, you know, 2 or 3 days and you're done.
Right.
Other things, you know, lots and lots of people like to use oil of oregano, which they buy at great expense in the health food store.
Right.
But, and I have to say, I'm not a big fan of the product because it's actually a good product, but the way people take it is not very safe. They'll put a drop in their mouth and it's quite burning.
Yes,
you'd be much better off to put a drop on a little corner of bread and swallow it like a pill.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Much better.
And if we can backpedal for a moment, you said, cinnamon and ginger are great with fevers. Does this have to be fresh?
No, not necessarily. So first of all, you have to realize that when your body runs a fever, you've got a cold coming on and you're running a fever, it's because your body wants that fever. It's intentional and beneficial. It cranks up your immune system and actually down-regulates the bacteria or the virus. So it's really advantageous. You do not want to take a pill to bring down your fever unless it's getting dangerously high.
Because that's kind of the go-to move nowadays.
Kind of the norm, but it's not a good plan. In fact, there's some very good research about why it prolongs the duration of your cold.
Right.
Because it's lowering your immune response. So what I would suggest is take something like ginger and cinnamon to get the temperature even higher. You do not have to have it fresh. Fresh ginger is tastier,
right.
But just powdered ginger stirred into water and drunk will actually work.
Wow.
Ginger is also really good if you're nauseous. So if you're feeling kind of queasy and sick because you're getting sick, then the ginger is also very helpful.
Well, I got to say, it's a little trick around work is when you're not feeling 100%, we do the lemon ginger tea.
Lemon ginger tea.
And that's fresh ginger. Mm-hmm. We juice it. Mm-hmm. And
we juice the lemon and the ginger together and then hot water and
you bet.
Hand that around to everybody.
Yeah. And I'll give you another kitchen tip that you chefs will probably want to know is if you have a nasty run-in with a sharp blade and you've got blood bursting out everywhere and it's like, yes, I can see you rolling your eyes. Like, yeah, you've had that happen, haven't you?
It's happened once or twice.
So the absolutely quickest way to stop a bleed, a small arterial bleed, you know, if it's your carotid artery, I'm sorry, you'd have to call 911, but, you know, you've cut the tip of your finger or something, cayenne pepper, powdered.
Really?
Sprinkle it straight over.
I'm writing this down.
And you're like, oh my God, she can't be serious. But I am serious. It will stop the bleeding within a few seconds. It'll stop the bleeding. And it will also stop the pain because cayenne inhibits the release of the neurotransmitter that sends the message about pain up to your brain.
Wow.
So, you know, you can go in the drugstore and buy cayenne ointments for your arthritic joints. Mm. You have a bad cut. You put your cayenne powder on, and every kitchen will have that.
Right.
And just straight on, just powder, straight on the cut. And it, again, will stop the bleeding and stop the pain. And it's almost instantaneous.
Incredible. Really?
Yeah.
That is, I am marking that off. And
so, you know, we could teach a whole class on herbal medicine from your kitchen cupboard.
That's crazy.
You really don't need to go and spend much money on stuff.
Right.
Honey is fantastic for burns. Mm-hmm. Oatmeal is really, really good. If you're stressed and upset, stressed and distressed, oatmeal actually is food for the nervous system and calms your nervous system down.
That makes a lot of sense. Yes. I always feel calm and I always like, you know, that cold winter day, a nice
big bowl of oatmeal.
Yeah. I've never been a fan of oatmeal in that traditional sense. I like to add it to things, but I do not like just a bowl of oatmeal.
I own a spoodle.
Spurtle.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's a good Scottish word.
Good Scottish.
For stir. I know I don't sound it, but I am Scottish. And every household has a spurtle.
Yes.
For stirring
Which was
your
one
porridge.
Of those ones that I think I actually put it up as a on the line.
Oh, for, a Trivial Pursuit kind of question. Yes.
I'm like, what is this?
Yes. And I was like, yes. But yeah. That's so
incredible.
Yeah. So your food should be your medicine. When I sit down to dinner. I mean, maybe my husband's a bit fed up with it now, but I tend to analyze my dinner. I'll say, well, here's my protein, and here's my flavonoids, and here's my liver support, and I've got my broccoli, which has got all the sulforaphanes for the liver and clearing hormones out. And I look at my dinner, and I'm actually thinking about my health. And when I plan a meal, I try to plan five colors on the plate, which is actually something out of Ayurvedic medicine. They suggest you should have five colors on your plate, and that way you're getting a good range of foods, not just one thing.
Yeah, I used to have a sushi cart, and I'm always sort of gravitated towards Asian foods, but they have wakushu, which is five flavors, five colors, five ways.
Mm-hmm.
And you should always try to meet those five.
And that will give you a selection of food, so you won't get nutritionally depleted from eating the same food again and again. I mean, we think we have this huge range of food in our contemporary world, but if you go down the grocery stores, it's actually corn, soy, and wheat.
Yeah.
And sugar.
Yeah. Right.
But just packaged different ways.
Yeah, most of our sugar comes from corn today anyways.
Right.
And they just mix different amounts with each of them.
Yeah, and different colors and different flavors. Mm-hmm. But if you really analyze, even your meat today is actually corn and soy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because that's what the animals are being fed. And that's what's going in. Corn has a very particular carbon isotope that's not found in any other plant. You can track corn in the diet. You can say, this animal ate something that ate corn because here's that particular kind of carbon that's not found in anything but corn. Meat is largely corn today.
I don't think we're making any enemies by bringing up the fact that Subway a few weeks ago, they're not a supporter of ours. Subway a few weeks ago, they determined, somebody did an independent test and found that their chicken was less than 40% chicken. It was 60% soy. And they said that wasn't an additive or whatever.
What
that was just that they had, that's what they had fattened the animal with, was pure soy.
Yeah. So really, in our culture today, we eat wheat, corn, and soy. And, you know, most people eat that most of the time. So they're nutritionally depleted.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in my clinical practice, for about the last 15 years, I've specialized in holistic oncology. And those patients, I mean, the first thing we do is diet.
Yeah.
You know, and if they can't eat, I mean, I have patients who are in hospital on tube feeds, and I just have to make powdered drinks and pour it down their tubes.
Wow.
Because they can't live on the stuff they're being given in the hospitals.
Right.
Which is corn and sugar. So, you know, so I think for me, diet is the fundamental, it's the foundation of health. If you don't eat well, then why would you think that a pill is going to fix you?
Yeah.
Right. What's that true. All about?
Right.
Well, I hate to bring it up because I know you're going to hate it, but let's talk about the old food pyramid, which is...
The old food pyramid. It is old. It's very old food pyramid.
Which has now been thrown out, but that was kind of the basis behind healthy living, was this pyramid of this amount of this and this amount of this, and not really exploring the whole.
Well, right. Let's be honest. The food pyramid was introduced about 50 years ago by industry,
right,
to push government to sell and promote certain foods, in other words, grain and dairy. Yeah.
Right.
The food pyramid was not developed for the benefit of the population at large. It was an industry marketing move.
Right.
And I am a bit older than you guys, and I'm of an age where I remember when that food pyramid was it. You know, there was no discussion. Yeah. It was, you know, I came up and I was in college in the 1980s studying medicine. We learned about all animal fat is bad. Don't eat meat. Eat lots of grain. 60% of your diet should be grain. And I bought the whole story. That's what I thought was true. And years later, in 1999, I went back to school in summer school in Colorado State University in their nutrition department. And I took their summer school on the paleo diet.
Right.
Wow. And man, oh man, what an eye-opener. Yeah. I went in as a wannabe vegan, guilty because I couldn't quite sustain it with my traveling schedule, and I had been vegetarian since I was 18. It's a long time now.
Right.
And I came out of that summer school in 1999 thinking, I got it all wrong.
Right.
Or at least my teachers got it all wrong.
Right.
So I rethought a lot of things. I introduced animal foods back in my diet. And immediately, I have to say, some fairly chronic health things did clear up completely. That was interesting.
Yeah.
But I then wrote to a couple of dozen patients and said, I'm really sorry, but the science has moved along and I've learned better. And please come back for a free follow-up to rework your diet, because I've put you on this horrible, like, strictly vegan, high-grain diet, and I don't think it's probably the right diet for you anymore. So the paleo diet is really shaking things up. People know now that grass-fed or wild meats are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And we're differentiating between generic meat and grass-fed or wild meat. And I'm not just differentiating on taste, because that's a personal choice, but on your health parameters, just basically on the fats alone, if nothing else, the quality of the fat's completely different. Your commercial meat full of arachidonic acid, because it's been fed corn, and you know, cows are not meant to eat corn.
That's
it's not a natural diet.
Right. Wow.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, and I like to bring up the fact of Blaine. Like, when we started the podcast here, you know, he was very much in the food pyramid himself, and through doing the podcast and meeting people and getting into it, he switched over to that paleo diet. Mm-hmm. And we had
That was pretty much what one of the factors that led to Blaine leaving here, is he needed to free up more time to not just pursue knowledge of the paleo diet, but to change his lifestyle around. That's what he wanted to do.
And I think that is actually an issue. A lot of people, most of us, have gotten in the habit of making food be a very much a grab thing. It's not like, for me, I wake up in the morning, and we have a joke, me and my husband, the first thing I say to him, good morning, darling, what's for dinner? And we do, we plan our meals, and we plan a week ahead so that we've got things out of the freezer, we've soaked the beans, we've done the shopping, and so on. But people expect to be able to just grab something out of the cupboard and go. They don't even sit down to eat. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things I do with my patients is I give them a handout on how to eat. Not what to eat, but how to eat.
Absolutely. Right. I absolutely agree with that. And I think that that is where the education has come in. And I think the rest of it will fall in line. Maybe not necessarily naturally, but I think that we keep... Everybody embraces, eating local. Everybody embraces lots of new food.
Not everybody, unfortunately.
I guess, I mean...
The people we talk to.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah. It depends. A lot of the people that we talk to do. And I think that quite often it boils down to, educating people on how to eat.
How
and
to
the fact
eat.
That an instant answer or an instant solution isn't it's not helping you in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. And you have to meal plan. Like that's just part, it needs to be part of your life. But at the same time, it doesn't have to take up a ton of time.
Well, actually, if you've planned, it takes less time.
Yeah.
Once you sit down and plan for the week, then you don't have to plan again. And you, when you go shopping, you've got the right stuff in your cart.
Right.
It all goes together. I mean, I don't know if you realize, but this town is one of, we have a hospital here, as you know.
Right.
We are one of two hospitals in the province that has a kitchen.
Wow.
And we have a private charity hospital, so they have a kitchen. The other hospitals, you know what they have? Banks of freezers and banks of microwaves. I had a patient in hospital in Vancouver recently, and her toast was made in Edmonton.
See, that's ridiculous. And that's just,
and it was flown down and reheated.
No. Wow. I can't believe that.
Believe it.
Yeah.
We are one of two hospitals in the whole province that actually has a proper kitchen where they actually peel the carrots and boil the potatoes. And the new hospital, after some pushing, is going to have a kitchen. But we had to push for that because that wasn't in the plan, because that's not what hospitals do. Hospitals don't feed you. That's not what their job is.
Wow.
Which is kind of funny when you realize that that's where it starts.
Yeah.
It would be funny if it wasn't so sad.
Yeah.
Because that is where it starts. When people go into hospital and they're sick and they're fed what they're fed, and then they're expected to get better and they're expected to go home with a skill set of how to stay well.
Wow.
You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of surgery and drugs and procedures, and then they go home and they eat rubbish.
Yeah.
And they don't even know.
Right.
And it's not that person's fault. We haven't educated them in schools. You know, we don't teach kids to cook anymore.
Yeah.
Where did home ec go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
We're not teaching them to cook proper meals. We might teach them to bake a cake. But to actually menu plan and plan the nutrition of that food. And I mean, that's just not taught anymore. Yeah.
We've talked about it on episodes in the past. Right now, my kids, they have another 2 months before their food test comes up. And I said to them, here's the deal. You need to know how to cook a few meals. Like, my kids are 10 and 12. And I said, by the end of the school year, I want you to know how to cook a few meals of your choosing. And I will do anything you need to help facilitate
I think
that.
It's the best thing a parent can do. Teach your kids to cook before they leave home.
Yeah.
It's like it should be required parenting skills.
Absolutely.
Really.
It feels like, and it's some of my best bonding time with my daughters when I'm in the kitchen. And I do it all the time, but like when I'm with her and she's becoming creative and trying to try new ideas.
And then sitting down and eating with your kids.
Yes.
Without your devices.
Turning off the screens.
Yes, all screens off. Now I understand you can get an app that turns off all the devices for all the household. I'm like, really? You need an app? You can't just tell people to leave that out of the room.
Right.
Now, you have to have an app to turn your kids' devices off. That's pretty sad.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. But then again, I was reading yesterday actually, about how many kids are hurt by the amount of time their parents are spending on screen.
Right.
And ignoring the kids. So it does go both ways.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I mean, if we don't talk to our kids about eating properly, if we don't demonstrate eating properly, if we don't teach them that, you know, meat does not come on styrofoam trays.
Yeah.
Like, they have no respect for food.
Right.
They have no relationship to food and consequently to their own health and well-being.
Yeah.
They're very disassociated from the fact that what you eat does impact your health and, in fact, can make or break your health.
Mm-hmm.
So kids don't even know that anymore.
Right. Yeah. It's sad. And that's one of the things that we sort of hope to combat on this in what we do.
Definitely, we want to get our listeners out there to
and
get
I mean,
on board. And
we're not talking about everybody going out and, you know, grazing in the fields or, you know, hunting down a deer with your bare hands.
No,
it's true.
Well, Blaine, the original.
But actually just, you know, respecting food maybe is what I would say, so that you respect the source of your food, you respect the animal that gave its life, you respect the farmer that put his life to growing your food.
Right.
That's why we need to know our farmers. That's why we need to buy from the farmer's market. It's a respect thing for the source of the food, the people that make the food, and then consequently for yourself eating it.
It's that disconnect has happened that we don't know. Mm-hmm. We just pull it out of a box and eat it instead of actually being connected with it.
And a third of all food bought in the Western world is thrown away in the household.
Mm-hmm.
We have hunger in this country. We have hungry people, and we throw away one third of the food we buy at the retail level.
That's
just ridiculous.
Yeah.
When did we stop taking all the outer leaves of the cabbage to make a soup? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what's wrong with making your own stock? Oh, it can't be bothered.
Yeah.
So in my house, you know, we figure out basically that we should be spending at least 20% of our time on food. Food prep and food planning and food work. You know, if you think that's a day a week, if you're working week. Mm-hmm. And so I have quit my job to spend more time in my gardens because I figure I can make it up that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's about balance. You know, you can work, and then get ill because you're not looking after yourself.
True enough.
And then you're not enjoying all that time you're working. Hang on a minute. There's something wrong with that
picture. Where's the balance? Yeah.
But we have. We've gone so far away from food that we think of it as a chore and it's not a pleasure for most people.
Right.
Where it should be. It's one of the best pleasures.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I can't really empathize, but I can see it for sure.
Yeah.
Tasting something fresh, something new for the first time.
Yeah.
Combining the right ingredients. Just experimenting. That's
and I think kids have that innately. We just sort of take it out of them.
Yeah. Well, I noticed my daughter went from, when she was very young, we pushed everything on her and she loved everything. Mm-hmm. And then she just sort of became this white bread.
That's
cheese.
Probably the influence of school and friends.
Yeah, and now she's slowly starting to come out and she's becoming a bit more receptive.
Our kids are more or less the same age and same thing. Mine were extremely experimental and receptive to everything, and then they became very resistant, and only in the last year have they sort of swung back towards trying new things a lot.
When you challenge them to do it and get their hands dirty.
It's definitely the onus is on the parent, though, to develop that in their kid. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and chatting
with us again.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
I think we learned a lot about medicine.
Yeah.
And food. And I think there's a lot more to talk about.
We are just scratching the surface. How can people learn more?
If people want to learn more about herbal medicine and food and putting them together and being healthy, they can contact me directly at my website, chanchalcabrera.com. I'll just spell that, C-H-A-N-C-H-A-L-C-A-B-R-E-R-A, chanchalcabrera.com.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us again.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yes. And we'd love to hear from you. Any of your feedback would be greatly appreciated. And don't forget to send us an email at theediblevalley@gmail.com and check out our Facebook page where we're definitely bringing up some tweets and stuff like that of stuff that's going on in our food world.
And just let me say a quick thanks to all of our sponsors, Butcher's Block in Courtney, westcoastprovisions.com, who keeps throwing little tweets our way and little shout-outs. Ivan's Truffle has always been supporting us, Atlas Cafe, Studio Live, and Kirstenwood Music. Everybody definitely all pitches in and helps us keep the show going, and thank you so much for that.
All right. Thank you for listening.